But let me quit there, because we do indeed have our guest, somebody I just spoke to a couple of weeks ago on another program. I love it. Maybe we'll be able to do a completely different take on his subject. He's author of a new book called What Is Next for Chicago? What Next Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. I'll bet you it ain't just Chicago. There's a lot of cities around this country that are being corrupted, just like our kids that I've been ranting about. Same perpetrators, different arena. We're going to talk to Matt Rosenberg, who drove a yellow cab in Chicago, worked for Better Government Association, Chicago Times, Pulitzer finalist. He is a journalist, a hiker, hikes in the Mountain West, and has worked in public policy, advocacy, journalism, and communications for more than three decades. Welcome to Spouting Off, New Hampshire, Matt Rosenberg.
Karen, great to be with you again. How are you today?
It is good to be with you too. So, Matt, people are suffering watching their hometowns, the cities that they love, being destroyed. I'm originally from Denver, and I think I told you this before. My husband and I are Liberty refugees. We moved from the state of Colorado to the state of Texas, as many people are voting with their feet. But it is heartbreaking to see the same ills, the same problems in every big city run by progressives, Democrats, demagogues, communists, authoritarians, and the like. Look at New York City, where I worked and lived for well over 13 years. So, Matt, tell us about Chicago specifically, and you know, why you decided to write this book.
Last year, Taryn, I was watching Chicago erupt into violent chaos on the news from my home back in Seattle. I did live in Chicago for 30 years, from the mid-1960s to the mid-1990s, and I always came back. I've always been just hugely attached to this city. I think it still has strands of greatness in its DNA. I think we can't afford to let cities swirl down the drain, and that's part of the reason I came back. I saw my old hometown just erupting into violent chaos, and I felt like the news reports, you know, while they were useful, they just weren't telling me enough. So I moved back in, moved into a neighborhood called Bridgeport, which has a ton of history. It's from where Mayor Daley came, and then the second Mayor Daley, and actually three other Irish mayors of Chicago. And from there, I went deep into the South Side to talk to Black people in their homes and workplaces and get their take on what's gone wrong and how to fix it. And it was a real eye-opener, because I heard a lot of things you don't normally hear in the mainstream media. And I came across a lot of success stories. So the troubles are great here, but the hope is actually substantial, and a lot of it lives, you know, in one household at a time. So that was kind of, you know, an overview of what my experience was and why I came back here to begin with.
So you are back in Chicago now, huh?
I am, and it's really interesting, and I think it's good to do for a writer of this kind of book. You know, first of all, you kind of have to have come from here or lived here, in my opinion at least, but to come back. And so I came back not only for 2.5 months last year in the autumn. I've been back here for over a month, and, you know, I'm seeing things again. And talking to new people and hearing new things. I just learned yesterday over breakfast with a woman from the South Side that I made the acquaintance of. I learned that young men, gangbangers and their ilk, are not even getting their guns entirely from places like Indiana and Michigan and Kentucky, although that certainly continues. They're also building them at home, one piece at a time, ordering the parts through the mail. and there are no serial numbers this way. You know, so it takes me right back into the excuse making of Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who blames the astronomically high murder rate in Black Chicago on systemic racism, and then also on guns, and who this summer, after a series of mass shootings, was calling for more federal interdiction in interstate gun sales. You know, if people are building them in their homes piece by piece, that's not going to work. The other thing is, you can keep confiscating guns, and I stand behind Chicago police and their intrepid work confiscating illegal guns. Don't get me wrong. The more guns they can get off the street, the better. But in the end, this goes back to how young men are raised. And that is something that white progressives are deadly scared of talking about, because they're afraid somebody will pin the badge on them of racist, racist, racist. And I say, and I notice a lot more people are saying these days, we have to have the same expectations for everybody. And it's not racist to hold your fellow human beings to the same standards that you have in your own household. You know, we raise our children.
No, it's racist not to. It's racist to give people a pass because of the color of their skin, isn't it? So here we are lectured to by a bunch of racists using this issue, in my opinion, I'd love your thoughts, to disarm law-abiding citizens of all races, colors, and creeds.
Mm-hmm. It tends to disarm people from voicing their judgment. It disarms them from exercising their right to free speech and their right to promulgate and uphold community-wide standards. And so, yes, I believe that's a very insidious thing. And, you know, I'm not one to stand up and wave my arms about critical race theory or CRT. I use the term unified theory of systemic racism. That's what I see in Chicago. But it's the same thing in the end, and it's out there. And so the groundwork.
Well, unified. I apologize. My dogs are barking.
Sounds
there,
like
and
they
that
have
doesn't
an
happen
opinion
very
also.
Often. They're usually very quiet, but I think the mailman is here or something. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't happen too
good.
Often.
So good.
When you say unified theory, I mean, we know. I don't know if I want to go down that road. The road I really want to go down is. What else you heard specifically from these people that you went to the South Side, and what they thought the problems were in Chicago? Because that's mm-hmm. like probably the meat of your book, isn't it?
It's a big, big part of it. I talked to a lot of people. I'll give you some really quick takes on different people and what I learned from them, okay?
You bet.
So one guy I particularly enjoyed talking to is a young man. He's about 28 now. His name is Jesse Mack. He's a young African-American man. He grew up in the public housing projects around 61st and Wabash in the eastern part of Englewood, which is a very tough, high-crime neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. He would hear sometimes gunfire at night. His mother at first was struggling with addiction problems. The father was not really around. Later there was his stepfather, but he had his own issues with substance abuse, and he was also sometimes violent toward Jesse's mother. He was in a K-8 school that was not great at all. By his recollection, the teachers often failed to really explain things to students who weren't getting it. He managed to skate through fine because he was a smart kid. But life changed for him when he entered an all-male public charter school that was majority young Black men. They had older Black men as teachers and administrators who were role models, Jesse said. They were all college graduates. There was a very strict code of conduct, and they were utterly, totally serious about knowledge. And it wasn't just a matter of taking tests. There was a lot of follow-up work on subject mastery, core subject mastery. So Jesse ended up getting a bachelor's degree at a well-regarded liberal arts school in Ohio. Then he came back and he actually worked for Urban Prep Charter Academy, but he wanted to get an MBA, and at first he did not get accepted into the program he wanted at DePaul University. His, GRE scores weren't quite high enough. He kept working, and finally he got accepted completed his MBA through night courses. Then wow. He moved up to a development officer.
Well, by God, that's white privilege to be so dedicated and have a good work ethic. I mean, he's being white, isn't he? Because whites have a monopoly on work ethic and on intelligence. And I'm sorry, I'll stop. Go ahead.
No,
it's insane
yeah,
what they're trying to push on us. Here's a great
kid. I know exactly.
Kid.
Yes.
Got it. Go ahead.
He demonstrated a number of traits that some of these racial essentialists say is somehow white because they want to make excuses. So Jesse's doing pretty well. He came from a very tough beginning and turned things around. He made his own luck, and his mother got her own act together and eventually got a master's degree in psychology and has been working in the professional world for several decades. And Jesse also emphasized that she was very religious and she raised him in a certain way and did not let him go out and hang out with just anybody. He could not hang out with kids who were in trouble. And he and his mother were in church very, very often throughout the years. And he still is a regular churchgoer, and he credits her A for the way she raised him and B for raising him religiously. So I think that's huge. I got a similar story, or a related story at least, from a woman from Louisiana, originally named Latasha Fields. She lives on the south side of Chicago with her husband, Ron. He's a barber. She's a homeschooling entrepreneur. She started out as a 17-year-old single mother on welfare, working in Burger King for $4.50 an hour. Within 4 years, she was running her own real estate company. She made her own luck, too. It started when they noticed her at the real estate office where she came in to pay her rent. Just being a good tenant and having a small baby with her somehow got them interested in her. She became a homeowner. She began working as an administrative assistant in that office, and from there she learned to manage properties, and before long she was out on her own running a real estate company. Up here in Chicago, she runs a home school that educates other people's children as well as her own, and it's in a very neatly organized basement space in their home. I've seen it. And she's a tremendous advocate for Black self-determination. And she said something to me, Karen, that opened my eyes. And
good, I think because we got to wrap it up, okay? So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Ahead. She said, she basically said, listen, Black Lives Matter only talks about Black lives when a white cop takes them. And you need to understand all Black lives matter. We need to talk about the Black-on-Black violence. I'm paraphrasing.
Doggone, so that right. Was
huge and, point and she made.
This is a problem all over this country when leftists are in charge, and they're in charge of big cities. Where do people get your book?
People get it at Amazon. Just search for What Next Chicago. You can also go to Barnes & Noble online, search for What Next Chicago.
Okay. Matt Rosenberg, thanks for joining us. We got to run.